just try to go through this somewhat quickly so you get an idea of what is happening. So what's going on is the sages approach Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma first speaks, then after he speaks, then he asks Bhrigu to speak. So actually the main part of the text is all being spoken by Bhrigu. But it's the knowledge that he received from Manu, from Lord Brahma. Chapter 1. The great sages approached Manu when he was seated in single-minded concentration. They exchanged mutual salutations in the proper manner, and then they said this to him: "Sir, please tell us, properly and in order, the duties of all four classes and also of the people who are born between two classes. For you, Lord, are the only one who knows the true meaning of what is to be done in this whole system, made by the self-existent one. That cannot be imagined and cannot be measured." When the great and great-souled sages had properly asked him this, Manu, whose energy was boundless, honored them and replied, "Listen, once upon a time this universe was made of darkness, without anything that could be discerned, without any distinguishing marks, impossible to know through reasoning or understanding. It seemed to be entirely asleep. When the Lord, who is self-existent, himself manifest, caused this universe to become manifest, putting his energy into the great elements and everything else, he became visible and dispelled the darkness. The one who can be grasped only by what is beyond the sensory powers, who is subtle, unmanifest, eternal, unimaginable, he of whom all creatures are made, he is the one who actually appeared." He's now talking about Vishnu. "He thought deeply, for he wished to emit various sorts of creatures from his own body. First he emitted the waters, and then he emitted the semen in them. That semen became a golden egg, as bright as the sun. With his thousand arrays, Brahma himself, the grandfather of all people, was born in that egg. The waters are born of man, so it is said. Indeed, the waters are the children of the primordial man. And since they were his resting place in ancient time, therefore he is traditionally known as Narayana, resting on those born of man. One who is the first cause, unmanifest, eternal, the essence of what is real and unreal, admitted the man who is known in the world as Brahma. The Lord dwelt in that egg for a whole year." It means the Karanadak ocean is there. Then from that he manifests as he breathes out the golden eggs like that. Then he enters them, and then he resided in them for a year.
The waters that emitted from man means that it came from him?
Yeah, it means the water. Yeah.
That's his respiration, isn't it?
Yeah. See, the problem is all these commentators and everyone who translate, they're not devotees. So they don't know beads what's going on. That's the problem. The Lord dwelt in that egg for a whole year, and then, just by thinking, he himself divided the egg into two. Out of the two fragments, he made the sky and the earth and the atmosphere in the middle, and the eight cardinal directions, and the eternal place of the waters. And out of himself he grew the mind and heart, the essence of what is real and unreal. And from mind and heart came the essence of I, the controlling consciousness of self. And the great one, which is the self, and in all material things that have the three qualities, and one by one the five sensory powers, the grasp of sensory objects. So you can see as Krishna is doing his part of the creation. Mm. He's breaking down the elements and then creating all the senses, the sense objects. You know, like from ether you get the ears, and you get sound. Mm-hmm. You know, from the air, then you get skin, and you get touch, mm-hmm. the sense of touch. Mm-hmm. So he's describing all these different things.
This mind and heart, is that the same thing, or sometimes cheta dharpana marjana cleanses the heart when we touch?
Yeah, well, the mind is in the heart.
Mind is in the heart.
Yeah, means in the chaitana. Means in that place you have the mind, intelligence, the ego, the soul sits there, the super soul sits there, it's all there. Probably means the mind and the emotions is probably what it means there. Because when you say something of the heart or it breaks the heart, it means it's the emotions. Like that, because But by mingling the subtle parts of the six that have boundless energy with the minute particles of his own self, he made all living entities. Since the six subtle... Six are the five sense organs and the mind, or the six elements. Since the six subtle parts of his physical form embody these, therefore wise men call his physical form the body. This would be the universal form. Oh, I see. Sharira, inhabit. More literally, inhabit, Sanskrit, ashrayanti, with the body, sharir. The gross elements enter into that with their innate activities, and the imperishable mind and heart that makes all living beings enters with its subtle parts. But this universe arises from the subtle minute particles of the physical form of those seven men of great energy. This is seven men. Here. You don't explain it properly. Each of these elements takes on the quality of the one that precedes it. It means from the one comes the other. They all come out like that. You know, from the ether, then you get the air, then you get to that, and then it comes like that. So that each is traditionally regarded as having as many qualities as the number of its position in the series. But in the beginning, he made the individual names and individual innate activities and individual conditions of all things, precisely in accordance with the words of the Vedas. And the Lord emitted the host of gods who have the breath of life and whose essence is the ritual, and the subtle host of the amenables and the everlasting sacrifice. Amenables to the sadhyas. In other words, he's going through now all the aspects of the Purusha Shukta.
It's like the Purusha Shukta.
Yeah, it's like the Purusha Shukta, it's like the Bhagavatam, it's like creation's creation. Because every scripture, Vedic scripture, must start with the Krishna's creation, and then come into Brahma's creation, then come down to the point of where that subject starts. Right? Because if you want to take... whole idea is if you want to connect everything back to God, you have to know actually how it does that. So you have to know how you get like from Ayurveda back to God, or how from the Sanskrit back to God. Then it has its real connection. So if you don't get into this aspects, you don't really know the subject. You may be expert grammarian, but you actually don't know Sanskrit. Because unless you can connect it to Krishna, you're dealing with illusion. And when you can connect it, then you're like that. So every branch of knowledge will always start from creation and come down. Pretty left-handed. Both of you. I'm impressed. Okay. Okay. From fire, wind, and the sun, he milked out the triple eternal Vedas, consisting of the Rig, Yajur, and Sama, so that the sacrifice could be accomplished. He emitted time and the divisions of time, the constellations, the planets, rivers and oceans, mountains, rough ground and smooth ground. So now you see this is the secondary creation. This is Brahma. He's created Brahma, and now all this is happening. Inner heat, speech and sexual pleasure, desire and anger. Indeed, he emitted precisely this created universe because he wanted to emit these creatures. You notice here it says, precisely in accordance with the words of the Vedas. So Krishna, in other words, Krishna establishes the Vedas, and then he creates everything exactly in line with that. You know, so both things happen, because the Vedas are considered apurusheya, they're eternal. So then they're always there. So then whatever he creates is also always is according to that.
You know? He follows his own rules.
Yeah, he follows his own rules. Because he wants it like that, so he establishes the rules like that. Because he's going to do like that. So it's very important, is that, because sometimes it'll be said that, well, these things would, you know, don't apply to modern day, the Western culture. But it's Krishna's rules. It means 100 years ago, people stuck their fingers in fires and got burnt. You know, you put cloth in water, it gets wet.
Right.
And today you can do exactly the same thing. People still breathe, people still eat, people still pass stool and have sex.
Mm.
You know, it still works exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. But somehow or another, there's this idea that we are so special as Westerners that the Vedic system cannot work on us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for us.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I have to follow the Vedic system, actually I have to, one, admit I am not educated, I am not cultured. And I will have to make the endeavor to educate myself and become cultured.
Mm-hmm.
And so that will take some endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I don't have money, but I'm willing to work for it and endeavor and call big meetings and social development to develop money in a social background, but I'm not willing to take the effort to educate myself in the Vedic standard. Yeah, so the whole thing is it's contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
As Krishna created it, it works. It doesn't matter who you are, where you are, it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of if you follow it. You know, like you have a recipe. It doesn't. So the person cooked a recipe in India. It doesn't mean that you can't take the same recipe and cook it, you know, in America or in China.
Mm-hmm.
It'll work if you follow the recipe. If you don't follow the recipe, you know, or refuse to follow the recipe, you know, or just say because they are Indians and they cooked it in India, therefore it comes out. But in America, you know, if you take, you know, rice, if you take, you know, cauliflower and cheese and follow that recipe, it won't come out. You know, so it's not very logical. So the point being made here is that Krishna is established according to his rules. And in order to distinguish innate objects, he distinguished right from wrong. Here's the connection.
Mm.
Right? Now we've done this whole creation, Krishna's creation.
Mm-hmm.
Means Garbhodakshaya Vishnu manifesting the unlimited universes. Then he enters as Karanadakshaya Vishnu. Then he enters it as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
Mm.
Then he expands it. Mm. And enters into all the different things, like in the Purusha Shukta, like that. Then Brahma then performs his creation, all the living entities and everything, the planets, the rivers, the constellations, everything like that. Then, now we get down to where the laws start, here. And in order to distinguish innate activities, right, because it means the material world is, it's all dead matter. So the movement of dead matter doesn't really mean anything. But because the living entity is here to perform the you know, his perverted pastimes of trying to enjoy the material nature, right?
Mm.
Therefore, since he thinks he's the doer, then there must be activities which are considered good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's the point. And in order to distinguish innate activities, he distinguished right from wrong. And he yoked these creatures with the pairs, happiness and unhappiness, and so forth. For with the impermanent atomic particles, of which are traditionally known as the five elements, in their order, this whole universe comes into being. Notice here also, this is a side point, impermanent atomic particles. So this then wipes out Vaishyasika and Nyaya, because Vaishyasika, the whole thing is the atomic particles are eternal. So the manifestations as, you know, trees and houses and people is
mm-hmm.
temporary.
Mm-hmm.
But they say the atomic particle is eternal, so everything comes from the atoms. But here he says the impermanent atomic particles.
Mm-hmm.
So even those are, so right there he wipes out the atheistic.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever innate activity the Lord yoked each creature to at first, that creature by himself engaged in that very activity as he was in created again and again. So as he says he's yoked each creature to that a particular activity, and as they're created again and again, they're still doing the same thing. So it's not that each time it changed. No, it's just how Krishna created it, what activities he gave to what living entity, that they did then, and they're still doing today, 151 trillion years later. You know? Amazing, but true. Harmful or harmless, gentle or cruel, right or wrong, truthful or lying, the activity he gave to each creature in creation kept entering it by itself, just as the seasons by themselves take on the distinctive signs of the seasons as they change, so embodied beings by themselves take on their innate activities, each his own. You know, dogs always act as dogs, cats always act as cats, you know, birds always act as birds, like that. Then, so that the worlds and people would prosper and increase, from his mouth he created the priest, from his arms the ruler, and from his thighs the commoner, and from his feet the servant. He divided his own body into two, and became a man with one half, a woman with the other half. In her the Lord imitated Viraja. And that man, Viraj, generated ascetic heat, and by himself emitted someone. You, who are the best of the twice born, should know that the one whom he emitted was me, the creator of this whole universe. Yeah, that I know of. I mean, in the other translation, it's clear it's Brahma. Yeah, because he's saying Brahma was created, this, that, that, and then he gets down to saying, then you should know that that one who was emitted was me, the creator of this whole universe. Because I wanted to emit creatures, I generated inner heat that is very hard to produce. And then at the start, I emitted the 10 great sages, lords of creatures: Marichi, Atri, Angiris, Pulastri, Pulaha, Kratu, Pachetas, Vashishta, Bhrigu, and Narada. So this is Brahma speaking, because he admitted them. These admitted seven other Manus who had immeasurable brilliant energy, and the gods and the troops of gods, and the great sages who had boundless energy, and genies and ogres and ghouls and centaurs and nymphs and demigods, and dragons and snakes and supernatural birds, and the several classes of the ancestors, and lightning, thunderbolts and clouds, straight rainbows and curved rainbows, comets, whirlwinds and meteors, and the higher and lower celestial lights, quasi-men, monkeys, fish, and various kinds of birds, livestock and animals and humans, beasts of prey, and animals with two rows of teeth, worms, bugs, and moths, lice, flies, and maggots, mosquitoes, gnats, and various stationary things. Thus, this whole universe, stationary and moving, was created by those great-souled ones at my command through the use of inner heat, each according to its own innate activity. I will tell you now of what sort of innate activity each sort of living being here is said to have, and also their order according to their birth. So you see, is all this is explained in the Bhagavatam, you know, and Prabhupada's given all this. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, also we will notice as we go through this, especially, you know, through this chapter and that the Bhagavatam has just taken the essence of it from the mood of the devotee, so how he sees how the Lord has created. Mm-hmm. So here the sages have gone to Manu because they're asking him to explain everything. But it's not the presentation is not necessarily a devotional presentation, mm-hmm. like that. But in the Bhagavatam, then that's being presented purely from a devotional point. Mm-hmm. In other words, we'll see by this exercise that whatever is being described here that is meant for devotees is already included in the Bhagavatam and in Prabhupada's purports, mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it makes it very difficult to say that it doesn't apply. Livestock and wild animals, beasts of prey, and animals with two rows of teeth, ogres, ghouls, and humans are born from the embryonic sac. So it's nice to know that ghouls are also and ogres. Birds, snakes, crocodiles, fish, turtles, and various other species of this sort, born on land or in the water, are born from eggs. Mosquitoes and gnats, lice, flies, maggots, and other species of the sort which originate from heat are born of sweat. All the stationary plants that grow from the seed or node are born from shoots, herbs. Herbs are those that bear many flowers and fruits, and then die with the ripening of the fruit. This is an interesting thing, is that herbs, it's given as a separate thing. Yeah, is that herbs or oshadi, they're special because they grow, and when they ripens, it dies. Mm. So it's the least violence is mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. you know? Because mm. you take all the grains in that, but the plant has already died.
Right.
Like that, so there's not. Or you have, you know, fruit trees, it's still alive, you pick. Mm-hmm. That's all right, it doesn't harm the tree.
For the grains?
Yeah, for the grains as they grow and then they die. Mm. Trees that have fruit but no flowers are traditionally known as lords of the forest. Those that bear both flowers and fruit are called trees, or that's vriksha, means that will be cut down. Here she doesn't use the Sanskrit. The various sorts of plants that have one root, and those with many roots, the different species of grasses and climbing vines and creepers all grow from a seed or a shoot. Enveloped by darkness, by a darkness that has many forms and is the result of their own innate activities, they have internal consciousness and experience happiness and unhappiness. It means they have consciousness, all these, mm. and they experience, so they're very heavily in tamaguna. Mm. Like that. Prabhupada mentions, I think someone said that when you pick the leaves, it doesn't hurt the plant. He says it does, but they forget immediately.
Yeah.
You know? It's like they experience and then they forget it. Mm-hmm. So it's like it doesn't. In this terrible cycle of transmigration of living beings, which moves relentlessly on and on, the levels of existence are said to begin with Brahma and end with them. In other words, you have Brahma at one end and the non-moving living entities at the other. When the one whose prowess cannot be imagined had thus emitted the whole universe and me, right? So that means the Lord, who had emitted this whole universe and me, Lord Brahma, he vanished once again into himself, pressing time against time. For when the God awakens, the universe moves, and when he sleeps and his soul is at rest, then everything closes its eyes. And when he is fast asleep, embodying beings whose souls are conditioned by their innate activities, cease from their own innate activities, and when the mind and heart become faint, and when at the same time they are all dissolved into that great soul, then the one who is the soul of all living beings turns back and sleeps happily. Lodging in darkness, he remains there with the sensory powers for a long time. He does not engage in his own innate activities. And then he moves out from that physical form. He becomes the size of an atomic particle and enters into the seed of what moves and of what is still. And when he has united with that, he leaves his former physical form. Thus, by means of waking and sleeping, the imperishable one brings to life this whole universe, moving and unmoving, and tirelessly destroys it. So he enters everything as the super soul. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's when everything is wound up into him, everything sleeps, and when he manifests it, it all moves. So it's all being controlled by him.
That when the Lord sleeps, then everything else sleeps.
Mm.
Is that correct understanding, or my understanding was that when he breathes in, then the partial annihilation breathes out?
No, that when he breathes in, that's a total annihilation.
Total annihilation.
There's also the aspects of must be when he's resting also, when Brahma, when the end of Brahma, then it goes. Because you have these different levels of the demigods. Like there's the level where he rests during the rainy season. Because the Uttarayana is the daytime of the demigods. And the Dakshinayana is the night. So in the night he sleeps part of that. Like he wakes up at the end of Kartik, right? But then we still have another few months before January when it goes back into Uttarayana.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, he also gets up early.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Like that. It means the Dakshinayana starts, and then there's a short period, and then there's a shayanakata, so he takes rest. So he takes rest early, gets up early. Like that. There's that level on the demigod's level. And then there's on a higher level, on Brahma's level. Then, because there's so many levels of the dissolution. Like that. When he had made this teaching, he himself first made me grasp it according to the rules. And I taught it to Marichi and the other hermits. Okay, so when he had made this teaching, he himself first made me grasp it according to the rules. First grasp it according to the rules means first understand the rules. Like that. Then after that, you understand what is the purpose of the rules, what's behind the rules. But first you have to learn, just like mathematics, you first learn the numbers, you learn some, you know, you learn your times tables and your addition tables and all this, so you grasp it by the rules. Then after that, you learn how to apply it and all its different things, what are its purposes. Like that.
Same with Sanskrit.
Yeah.
When you learn Vyakaran, when you learn all the sutras. You don't know what they are.
Yeah, I know what they mean.
You're just a little kid.
Yeah.
7 years old, and you're chatting all these grammar rules.
Yeah.
You don't know what they are.
Yeah.
And later on, 10, 11, 12, 13, they get explained to you all about this.
So it's the same as you start off by hearing, Shravanam first, then Manana, you contemplate and apply, and, you know, get that technical practice. Then you come to, by that practice and devotion, then you come to Nididhyasana, realization. Like that. So, but you first by hearing. And I taught it to Marichi and the other hermits, means his other sons. And then Bhrigu here means, while he's speaking, Bhrigu is present. Bhrigu here will let you hear this teaching and leave nothing out, for that hermit came to understand it all in its entirety from me. Okay, so now, in other words, he's explained the background of it and connected it to Krishna. He explained Krishna, the creation, then how the secondary creation of, he created Brahma, and how through Brahma he's created everything. Then, to distinguish everything, he's made right and wrong, what is good, what is bad, what is gentle, what is violent, you know, what is truthful, what's untruthful, and then establish all the living entities according to that. And then all these living entities are, you know, in these categories of born from the womb, born from the egg, born from sweat, born from seed. And that, and then he explained all this to Brahma, taught him in it. Then Brahma then explained it to his sons. And now Bhrigu will explain it. In other words, he's given the whole background so that it's properly connected. Now the technicalities of the knowledge will be heard from Bhrigu. Because the important thing is, technicalities you can get from anyone who's expert. But the connection, that is what's called the acharya. Like that. Someone who can teach you the branch of knowledge is called an upadhyaya. Means upadhyaya means, adhyaya means study. Upa means, you know, that means that it's, how you say, like that brings one near, or it's like a sub, the sub-study of it. Because let us say that I learn all the elements, the technicalities of mathematics. That's actually not the real study. The real study is understanding what its purpose is, how to apply it, how it connects to everything, how it works, moves in everything, how everything is based on mathematics, like that. You know, and then how that connects back, how the Lord has created that, right? So the technicalities of the rules of the Dharma Shastra, that you can get from an upadhyaya. But to actually understand what its purposes are, how it connects to the Supreme, you know, what are the esoteric aspects or the hidden aspects, that has to be heard from the acharya. So Brahma is here as the acharya has spoken, and now he's turning it over to Bhrigu to speak, because the technicalities are there. You know, he's taught it once, why he has to teach it again? You know, they can hear from Bhrigu, give him a chance. He'll speak, by him speaking, he'll get more realization. Like that. Does that make some sense?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the culture that's going on there.
One question.
Huh.
Brahma created the living entities from the embryo, from the egg, from the sweat. And then Krishna gave the rules?
means basically, as you see, is how he explained it. He gave a synopsis of it, that Krishna created from the first creation and the secondary creation. Mm-hmm. And in that, Brahma was created. Mm-hmm. Right? Then, after that, he gets into that, gives the general. In other words, Krishna's creating it, but he does it through Brahma. Mm-hmm. So in other words, Krishna's done all that. Mm-hmm. Then he sees that he goes over it again now in more detail, pointing out Brahma's creation. Mm-hmm. And that. And then he gives those technicalities. But the point being made is, first, is actually it's Krishna's creating everything. Mm-hmm. He's doing the whole thing. But he is doing it through the agency of first himself, and then through the agency of Brahma. So like that. So you call it Brahma's creation, but it's understood that the power that Brahma has is coming from the Lord. It's not different. Okay. When Manu had spoken to the great sage Bhrigu in this way, Bhrigu's soul rejoiced, and he said to all the sages, listen, right? There are six other Manus in the dynasty of that Manu, who is born of the self-existent one, Brahma. They have great souls and great energy, and each emitted his own progeny. They are the sons of the self-illuminous, uppermost, dark, wealthy, gazing, and the radiant sons of the shining sun. What are they putting here? It's interesting. Okay. These seven manus, beginning with the one of the self-existent Brahma, beginning with the one born of the self-existent, abound in brilliant energy, each one in his own epoch, created and pervaded this whole universe, moving and unmoving. 18 blinks of an eye make up a period called a race course, and 32 race courses make up one fraction. These are, we know, probably just leaves them as Nimisha, Kashta, Kala, a moment is Muhurta, 48 minutes. You know, so now he's going through time. The same number of moments make up a day and night. The sun separates day and night, both for human beings and for gods. The night is for the living beings to sleep, and the day is for them to move about in their activity. A human month is a day and night for the ancestors. So it means the waxing of the moon, the waning moon for the Pitris, that's their day. And then our 6 months, and, you know, 6 months is the day, and then another 6 months the night for the demigods. Mm-hmm. So the Pitris, they work on a little bit lower level. Mm-hmm. Human month is a day and night for the ancestors, and is divided into two lunar fortnights. The dark fortnight is the day for them to move about in their activity, and the bright fortnight is the night for their sleep. It's interesting.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, just the opposite. Guess that's what you get.
The Pitris? They're not as demigods.
They're not on the same level as demigods. They're just they enjoy, you know, fairly good, how you say. You know, they have some enjoyment in that, but it's not like the demigods. They're below the demigods.
So any human being that goes,
I think there has to be a certain amount of piety to get there. These those who follow properly the Vedic things, this that may get there.
To Pitriloka.
Yeah. I don't think you can't be impious and go to Pitriloka.
And then to go to Indraloka or?
That, then you have to do specific, you know, pious activities to get you there, like 100 Ashwamedha yagyas to become Indra, like that. I mean, so if you just get there as one of the citizens to enjoy, then, you know, it would be much less. I haven't come across exactly. You know, what makes, what puts what person where. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll either be explained here, or we'll have to get it out of the Puranas. Mm-hmm. Human year is a day and night for the gods, and too it is divided into two parts. When the sun goes north, it is their day. When it goes south, it is their night. Okay, so they've just explained time here, like in the fifth canto. Mm-hmm. Now learn in summary the measurement of the night and day of Brahma, and of the ages one by one in order. It is said that the winning age lasts for 4,000 years. Winning age. This is of the demigods, so this is, means this must be the Satya Yuga. Winning age, Krita Yuga, yes, Satya Yuga. And the losing age, the Kali Yuga. Yes, okay. Okay, so this is 4,000 of the demigods. The twilight preceding it lasts for the same number of hundreds of years. In other words, it's 400 years as a twilight. Mm-hmm. And the partial twilight following it is the same size, 400. And the same other ages with their twilights and their partial twilights. The thousands and hundreds of years are calculated by subtracting one from each progressive age. In other words, 4,000 is the Satya Yuga, with 400 as the twilight between it on both sides. Then you have the Treta, which will be 3,000, mm-hmm. so 300 years mm-hmm. twilight. Mm-hmm. Then Dwapara with 2,000 and mm-hmm. Kali Yuga with 1,000, mm-hmm. like that. So this is demigod years. For us, then it'll be, you know, 400. What's it? No, then you take it from
6 months.
No, you have 4,000, yeah, 432,000 years is the Kali Yuga. Mm-hmm. Then you multiply that by what is it? Then that's one part. Then you have, I think, two parts. Is the Dwapara, four parts is the Treta, and eight parts is the mm-hmm. no, it does not, it comes out to 10. So 1, then 2, then 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah. So you have that, then that times 2 is the length of the Dwapara, that times 3 is the length of the Treta, and that times 4 is the length of mm-hmm. the, like that. So you add that up, it comes to 10. So mm-hmm. 10 times that is 320,000. Yeah, so you come out like that. But that's including the sannyas. Mm-hmm. Like that. So here he's explained it without the sannyas. The sannyas are separate. So if you add it up, it'll come the same. So you have those two ways to calculate it. Mm-hmm. Either taking the thing and then adding the sannyas, mm-hmm. or including the sannyas. Mm-hmm. Like that. This period of four ages lasting for 12,000 years, that's of the demigods.
The Sandhya for Kali Yuga started 5,000 years ago. And how long does the Sandhya last?
In here, it'll be for 100 celestial years. So that means you have to take one year times 365 times 100. Yeah, so like that. 3,065, like that. It's like the Sunday, which is interesting that puts it around what the Westerns, where everything seems to start happening, it's like BC, I mean AD, with the birth of Christ and that. That's kind of like where everything's kind of well recorded, well documented, well everything. Yeah, means it's where the Kali Yuga really, the Sandhya is over. You know, the elements of Dwapara, you know, where you really have the strong Vedic culture and all those things are starting to degrade, and then these other things and all that is kind of like, you know, and the Kali Yuga is coming in. Yeah, and that, and then it kind of like, bink, everything, like, everything starts coming up more prominently. So then it's like the Vedic culture is kind of like wanes, and then mm-hmm. the other things start to become prominent.
That's very interesting.
So 12,000 of the demigods. Okay. And it has been a number of Okay, this period of four ages, lasting for 12,000 years, that has been enumerated first, is to be an age of the gods. But the sum of 1,000 ages of the gods is known as a single day of Brahma, and a night of Brahma is exactly as long. Those who know about days and nights know that an excellent day of Brahma ends after 1,000 ages, and a night is exactly as long. At the end of this his day and night, the sleeper awakens. And when he is awake, he admits mind and heart, the essence of what is real and unreal. Mind and heart, the essence of what is unreal, real and unreal. So this is important to understand, because the essence of what's real and unreal is actually coming from the heart, from the mind, the mind and emotions. This means I decide that a particular combination of, you know, a particular tin can with four wheels is very valuable. You know, it's called a Mercedes. Mm-hmm. It's just a tin can. Mm-hmm. But so much value is put on it. You can bring a dog, and the only value to it is it's vertical, you know, like a tree, and it'll pass urine on it. It doesn't matter if it's a Mercedes or it's a rock. It has to him the same value. Mm-hmm. So to what we consider worthwhile working for and what we will endeavor very hard for is according to what our mind accepts, mm-hmm. and the emotional, what we get out of it. You know, like if we attain, we the mind fixes on something, we work for it, we get it, but we also, the heart is not satisfied, then we don't consider it worthwhile. But if we get it, and that and the heart is satisfied, means what we expected to get from it. Mm-hmm. Like I worked very hard, I got my Mercedes-Benz, and I'm expecting everybody to say wow. Mm-hmm. And if I get that, then the emotions are also satisfied. Mm-hmm. So my mind is satisfied that I got it, but that's not enough. The emotions also have to be satisfied. Mm-hmm. This will come up later, mm-hmm. when they start talking about varna and ashram, situating oneself. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm. So this is what is, this is the reality to the living entity. It's all his mind. He thinks it's valuable, therefore it is worked for. You think it's not valuable, you don't work for it. Someone thinks spiritual life is valuable, they endeavor for it. Mm. They think it's not valuable, they don't endeavor for it. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's totally subjective. According to the mind. That's why if you actually want to establish culture, you have to go back to the rules and regulations of God, because that's not subjective. Mm-hmm. Right? That's, Krishna's created it, and we have to come in line with that. Mm-hmm. Like that. Otherwise there'll only be speculation. That's why a philosophy without religion is speculation. Because the rules are created by Krishna. Mm-hmm. The person who created the philosophy created the rules. And when you take the two together, it works. Mm. You know? Otherwise, you know, what do you get? You know, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
One example my guru once gave, back to the mind, huh. and the emotion. He said, he gave an example that someone may sit in a train station and sees a beautiful woman,
huh.
and then the lights go out.
huh.
Then he feels that he's sitting next to someone, and he thinks maybe it's that woman.
Huh.
So he's like pushing next to her, and then physically he experiences, you know, some jumping in the body and some stimulation.
Huh.
When the light goes back on, then it seems old lady or an old man sitting there, you know, with his shaking and dirty, and immediately all of that emotion and all of that experience that was there is immediately gone.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So it was completely on the mental platform.
Yeah. So what one thinks one is getting, that is the you know, that is the thing. So that's, yeah. It's a very, very essential point, because it applies everywhere in establishing the varnas, the ashrams, and all those things. It's very, very, very important. This thing, because one projects into what one is going to get out of it. Mm. And then if he gets that, he's satisfied. If he doesn't get it, he's not. But it's all, it's just the mind, because it's dead matter coming in contact with dead matter. Mm. You know, I think, what is his name? Sukadev mentions like taking a, you know, piece of wood and rubbing it on the wall, you know. You know, so that's actually what's happening when two bodies meet. Mm. But because of the mind, one projects, I touch this body, then it will, you know, this will be very nice. I touch that body, it's not very nice. Mm. You know, the different situations, it's all the mind. If you really get into it, the material world breaks down into, it's really a mechanic, you know, mechanical, just weird, perverted mess. Mm-hmm. You know? It's like what we think is going on is not going on. I mean, Krishna says as much as blinking the eyes, influencing others, you know, evacuating, all things that we think we are doing, says even that we're not doing. Like we talk to somebody and we influence them and they change their opinion. We think I'm doing it. No, it's the modes of nature. I desired to do it. Krishna sanctioned it, and the material modes of nature made everything work. The inflection of the voice, the words that I chose, everything like that. It's all the modes of nature. So factually, other than desiring, we actually don't do anything. But it's so well worked out. Krishna is so expert that as we desire it, then Krishna either makes it happen or not happen. Mm. And activity goes on. Mm. The modes of nature make it happen. So we think we're doing it. Mm. We're so conditioned that I thought I wanted to get up and move across the room, and I actually got up and moved across the room. So because that happens most of the time, then we see, I think I moved myself across the room. But we see sometimes one is laying in bed, one is sick, or you know, after, you know, a big kirtan or something, one can't hardly, you know, one just physically can't move. So one wants to get up. You start to move, but then you can't, you know. Mm-hmm. The body's painful and that, and you have to you immediately lay back down. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one doesn't, at that time, it doesn't click that I wanted to move across the room. I couldn't. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I'm not the one that's moving me across the room. I simply desire and it happens. Mm. And because it happens so naturally, you know, I think I'm the doer, when actually I'm not. Mm. You know? Because that's the minimal, then that. Or because we get conditioned to that. So someone who can't move for a long time, they get very frustrated. Because they think that I can't control and do what I want. Mm-hmm. You know, rather than understanding that I am being controlled. Mm. Right? The whole mood in the material world is I am the controller. Mm. So if you break it down, there isn't a whole lot. And you break it down as the whole idea is, you know, between this and that, it's, how you say? What we desire as valuable in this and that. It's not, it means one thing that we like to eat, we all think this is great. We eat it, we're in ecstasy. Mm. Someone else eats it, it's terrible. Mm. You know? So it's all just the mind, and what we are conditioned, our conditioned identity, mm. and the conditioned senses we've gotten from that identity, mm. that we have a tongue that when it tastes certain things, then we perceive it as nice or not nice, mm. you know, like that. So when you get down to it, it doesn't leave a whole lot of room for enjoying the material nature. You know? Therefore, it's mentioned, but then there comes the point where if someone can take that and still function very naturally as a balanced person, then they should move on that platform now. Mm-hmm. And if someone, by hearing that, it starts to freak them out, then you change the subject mm-hmm. to their platform of engagement mm-hmm. so that they are nicely, mm-hmm. you know, so that they will, because it's all Krishna's rules anyway. Mm. So whatever level that you start from there, mm. you know, mm-hmm. and then you gradually purify yourself and work yourself up till you get to that platform where you can see the sage of equal vision. Right. You know, he sees the dog eater, the elephant, the Brahman, Right? It's not that he sees them all on a... It's not that socially he sees them all and disrespects all of them equally, like, you know, our modern culture. No, he's seeing the soul. So he sees the pure spirit soul. So to him, they're all highly elevated persons. Like that. He sees Brahman. So it's like everything is spiritual. Like that. Because he sees ultimately it's all Krishna's energy, it's all Krishna doing it. But it's Krishna's. He's not part of it. His body's, it's not, so he's not the enjoyer. So until that mood of enjoyment is given up, then it's very difficult to come to that platform. So as long as the mood of enjoyment is there, then take that platform of enjoyment which belongs to us. What is our platform of enjoyment? You know, that suits our position. Mm-hmm. And engage that in that for Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Then, we see, that'll purify it. Mm-hmm. In other words, you do what is your level for Krishna. Mm-hmm. So if our level is detachment, then we follow the path of detachment for Krishna. Because it's all Krishna's anyway. What are we to be? It's not that we're giving something up. It's not ours in the first place. You know? And it means if we're attached to detachment, we follow that path for Krishna. And if we're attached to attachment, we follow that path for Krishna. But ultimately, we have to understand that all of it has nothing to do with pure love for Krishna. That's also another, like, how you say, hidden element of you know, the philosophy. Krishna's point is that you gain all this knowledge to understand I am not the body, the modes of nature are doing everything and all this, and you know, then there's a taste from working on that platform, but that's still karma misra bhakti. You know? Then when you come to that platform, then that knowledge is given up. You know, which then is very bewildering, because in the material world, then knowledge is considered very high. You know? Mm-hmm. Even in the mundane, someone with more knowledge is considered better situated as a karmi than someone who's not. But then we understand that the jnani is better than the karmi. Right? Because the jnani is situated and detached from the material world and doesn't engage in any material activities and all that. But even that is not considered very lofty. So this knowledge of how the material world works doesn't have anything to do with love for Krishna. Right? Love for Krishna doesn't have anything to do with the rules. It's just, he's so nice, you like him. Right? It means the residents in Vrindavan like Krishna just because he's the most wonderful person, not because he's God. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Just he's such a nice person. You know, he's such a nice boy, or such a nice child, or such a nice friend, or such a nice lover. Mm. He's the perfection of that. That's why they like him. So, therefore, when it comes to the Brahma Bhuta platform, that knowledge then the Vishwanath, I think, gives the example of just as a fire is extinguished as it consumes all its its fuel. So that knowledge burns up the material attachments and vision, and one gains a proper spiritual vision. But coming to the Brahma Bhuta platform, that same knowledge is extinguished by having done its job of burning up the material concept. And then one is left with the aspect of rati, or attraction to Krishna. If that's been cultivated. Like that. So then that is what is there. So it's a very interesting process. So it's like we put all the emphasis on performing prescribed duties in knowledge, But ultimately, that will all just burn up when that comes to that platform of bhava. But you're not going to get there unless you can't, until you destroy the conditioned nature, you can't just spontaneously develop your love for Krishna. So then one has to follow that conditioned nature in Krishna's service, you know, in detachment, with knowledge. In other words, you perform the activities of the karmi with the mentality and understanding of the jnani, you know? Mm-hmm. And as you advance, then with the absorption in the name and meditating on the Lord of the yogi, then that brings you to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Right? And then the pure essence of the whole, that whole yoga system, the karma yoga, the jnana yoga, and the you know, the astanga yoga, then all that's left is absorption in the Lord, that's samadhi. That in bhava is that always chanting the Lord's name and always meditating on Him. And then that itself, then when that becomes deep and perfect, and one pleases the, how you say, one has no material concepts that I am advanced and all these things, then that then from there one crosses into prema. Mm. But otherwise, all the aspects of karma, jnana, and yoga, they must be left. They would be burned up in the process. And all this one's left with is pure love.
When we use those aspects of karma, jnana, and yoga, are we taking support from those for bhakti?
No.
Or is bhakti giving support?
Bhakti is what makes them work. Mm-hmm. They on their own have no way to give bhakti. Karma, jnana, and yoga can't give bhakti. Bhakti is, it's actually the bhakti, hidden bhakti within them that supports them. But we don't take, that's the slow path, no, where the bhakti is hidden. We take the performance of devotional practice. In other words, we perform the activities how the advanced persons would. It means out of love they serve Krishna, they feed Krishna. Right? Mother Yasoda out of love feeds Krishna. Right? The gopis out of love feed Krishna. The cowherd boys out of love feed Krishna. But we don't follow their padati of offering. Right? We don't sit down with the deity with our plate and his plate, and we eat off of his plate and put things in his mouth and he puts them in our mouth. And we don't follow the cowherd boy padati like that. You know, so we follow according to these rules that Krishna has established within the realm of, you know, within the realm of sadhana, like that. And then by performing that, then we come to that, we'll slowly come to that platform. So it's also called bhakti. I mean, the whole process of following karma mr. bhakti, jnana mr. bhakti, yoga mr. bhakti, in to get to the platform of prema bhakti, that whole process is called bhakti because its purpose is bhakti. Right? But if you take that on its own without wanting to get to bhakti, then it's called karma, jnana, and yoga. You know? Just like I go to the market for the purpose that of cooking. It's all considered part of cooking. Right? If you don't go to the market, how you'll cook? I bring back the vegetables, I clean them, then I cook them. Right? Then I serve them. Like that. So the whole idea is you want to prepare something and feed somebody with it. Right? So then marketing's part of that. But there are people who all they do is marketing. Right? They just go, you want these things? They will supply those things. They go to the market, they get those things delivered to your door. What you do with them, they don't care. They're just a market. They're just a marketeer. So that's the thing, is someone who's follows karma, and its only purpose is to get the fruits. They're called a karmi. Right? Like that. But if one follows karma, in other words, engaging the body, the emotions, you know, the intelligence, in a particular activity according to one's conditioned nature, for the pleasure of Krishna, then it's part of the devotional process. It's part of sadhana bhakti. Like that. Because technically, we may say, well, no, we're only interested in bhakti, but sadhana bhakti technically is not bhakti. Bhava is technically not bhakti. Mm. Bhakti is bhakti. Prema is bhakti. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vishwanath makes that point. Mm-hmm. He says, when you get down to it, technically, sadhana bhakti is not bhakti. Mm-hmm. It's in pursuance of bhakti. Mm-hmm. It is the path by which you will get to bhakti. Mm-hmm. But understand that prema is bhakti. Mm-hmm. You know? And bhava is just the bud. It's like the sundi. Right. It's still not prema, but it's like, you know, getting very close. Mm-hmm. You know? Some elements are starting to come. Mm-hmm. Like that. What is this? What is going on?
The last shape.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah.
Huh? What is going on up there? You want to go up there and find out what is happening?
It smells unholy.
Okay. Yeah. Go up there and harass whoever's up there. Let them know we're not pleased with their behavior. Okay. So it's not bhakti. Bhakti starts, it actually is prema. Mm-hmm. Like that. But there are stages you go through. You know? Mm-hmm. So then you go through the platforms of karma, jnana, and yoga. Mm-hmm. You know? So basically you're going through karma where the emphasis is on karma and the knowledge is not so great and the absorption in thinking of Krishna, remembering Krishna, absorption in his name is not so great. That is the kanista. Mm-hmm. So he sees the external activities as the most prominent. Like that. Then the madhyama, then gyan starts to become more prominent. Mm-hmm. He still performs the activities of the karma, mm-hmm. but now he's seeing it more through knowledge. It's not that he's just doing it because of the particular liking of doing it. It fits the nature very nicely. He's very satisfied doing it. Mm-hmm. But that's there. But now he's seeing with the knowledge. He's starting to understand, you know, that the blinking of the eyes is coming from Krishna, the modes of nature are pushing everything and all that. And the absorption in the name is greater, therefore nishta, he's fixed in the name. Mm-hmm. He gets a taste for a name, attachment mm-hmm. for Krishna. Like that farther over here. It's right at this point. Right. It's right in the corner up there. You know, you can see some gaps up there, I think.
Inhabitant.
Yeah, the inhabitant is up there. So then
there's a nice example of how we've come back to this point of how everything's been done by Krishna.
No, yeah, farther up.
The example is of a child wants to lift like a harmonium,
uh-huh.
heavy bucket.
Yeah, yeah.
So it goes there and stands there and he tries.
Huh.
He can't because he's obviously not strong enough to lift such a heavy weight.
Huh.
The father sees what he wants to lift, so he goes and stands behind him.
Huh.
His son's holding the bucket, he's got his hand there.
Huh.
His father stands behind him, also holds the handle and lifts it.
Hmm.
So the boy's holding on to it, he's smiling and he's happy that he's lifted the bucket.
Hmm.
But actually his father's lifting everything.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But the only reason why the father is doing it is because his son desired.
Mm, yeah.
So the son desired, the father responded, sanctioned, and moved things in such a way that the bucket was lifted.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's good. Good example. So how you say? So that will be more the vision when one comes to that. The madhyama works more in that, more in that vision. There, or maybe even more, right up in the, right in the corner there. Yeah, in that area. I think behind that seems to be a very good spot to check for inhabitants. So then on when one comes to the platform of bhava, the uttama platform, you know, the beginning stage of the uttama platform, then the absorption means the advanced stages of yoga, of chanting and remembering, mm-hmm. are the prominent element, mm-hmm. you know, like that. And the other lower levels, one doesn't even have to follow anymore. But generally, if one is preaching and all that, then one will follow.
Is that called? Because there's a stage where, in the Bhagavad Gita describes where somebody's not attached to the activity and they're not attached to the fruit. And this kama mishra, the one's attached to the activity, but he offers the fruit. Hmm. And he comes, is it sakama?
That's sakama, nishkam.
Nishkama.
Oh, yeah, so nishkam. See, because one can do the kanista at level, both either in sakam or nishkam. Finding sakam or nishkam. Mm-hmm. I should move back a little bit. Is one can perform the activities. Means nishkam means pure devotee. Mm-hmm. Whether one's a kanista, madhyam, or uttam. Mm-hmm. Is pure devotee means he's performing the activity for Krishna. Mm-hmm. That is pure devotee. Then pure unalloyed devotee means prema. Mm-hmm. Right? So one can have pure devotee on either the Kanista Madhyama Uttam platform. Mm-hmm. Then within the Uttam platform, there's pure devotee, mm-hmm. which is bhava, mm-hmm. and there's pure unalloyed devotee, which is prema. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. So now Vishwanath breaks it up like this, just to make it very clear, mm-hmm. how it works. Mm-hmm. And this breakage is very good for the Madhyama, who can get into the technicalities of this, and pointing out that he actually is not a devotee, he's an aspiring devotee and all that, doesn't bother him, mm-hmm. because he understands that. Mm-hmm. And he can work very nicely with the anarthas in the heart. Mm-hmm. So the more he finds out technically how it works, the more enthused he becomes. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know? So, but then Baladev, which Prabhupada and Bhakti, which we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, then emphasize more, is Baladev's presentation, which is the same thing, but he describes the whole thing as the process of bhakti. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Vishwanath is saying that, but it's like, this is, you know, the pure unalloyed bhakti, and these are the stages of where you're trying to get to it. Right. And then Baladev is pointing out the whole thing is bhakti, right. but here it's like, here's the perfection, and here's the stages to get to that perfection. So, for general preaching and understanding, then Baladev's is the preferred presentation, because the Kanista cannot tolerate being pointed out what are all the fine points of anartha nivritti. He's just, you know, battling, duksing it out with the, you know, four regulative principles and getting his rounds in and, you know, just trying to not be overly nasty with devotees and critical and like that. So then when you point out the fine points of it, it's just like they just give up. Mm-hmm. You know, it's too much. So therefore, they're devotees, mm-hmm. but they're aspiring devotees. Mm-hmm. Means you're a devotee, but we want to come to the perfectional stage of devotee, the pure unalloyed devotee. Mm-hmm. You know, so from devotee, we can apply from a pure devotee to a pure unalloyed devotee, mm-hmm. like that. And then it's like enlivening. So you go from here to this point to that point, and it's very. You say, in other words, like Baladev gives the overview without getting into the technicalities, mm-hmm. of the detail, mm-hmm. like that. And Vishwanath gives a, you know, quick overview and then gets right into the technical, mm-hmm. details. Mm-hmm. So both these aspects are there. So as long as one is not proud and he's trying, then we always emphasize Baladev's, mm-hmm. presentation. Mm-hmm. Like that, always encouraging and always trying to, don't worry, you know, you've had some problems, keep pushing, go for it, it's, you know, like this. But if someone becomes proud and thinks that they're a great devotee, then you naturally switch into Vishwanath's, mm-hmm. you know, presentation and say, well, actually, until you cross bhava, then you're not a devotee. Don't mind. You know, means devotional service starts at bhava. Mm-hmm. So, as a kanista or madhyam, then, you know, you're just aspiring devotee. Mm-hmm. So it depends upon the person who you're dealing with.
A devotee has no karma, because when he surrenders to Krishna, and he's not under the control anymore of Mahamaya, like Yoga Maya, when does that, that means he has no sins?
Means it's see the in the actual spiritual path, the real problems are the desire seeds, right? The real is the desire seed. You know, the desire seed, the sprout, and the situation in which you're going to enjoy that karma. The actual enjoyment of the karma isn't the main difficulty. Of course, by enjoying it, then one either develops more desire or changes desire from one desire to another. But the main problem is the desire seed itself. So the devotional process destroys the first three. You know, the seed, the sprout, and the nearly fructified reaction. Like that. But it doesn't destroy prarabdha, which is what is the fruit that you will get. Depending upon what Krishna will see will be good for you, he may give the full result, partial result, or delay the result. You know? He just does whatever is best for us. So then that is, what do you call it? He leaves that. These many reasons are there. If he didn't leave that and just took everything away, then we would forget Krishna, because everything would be so nice and wonderful, then we wouldn't remember Krishna. You know? So, material world means trouble. Krishna comes here, he himself goes through trouble, so it's also part of the pastimes. The devotees go through also trouble, because in that trouble they remember him.
And that's Krishna's mercy.
Yeah. So the prarabdha he doesn't get rid of, though many devotees are under the idea that the prarabdha is what will go away. And they absorb themselves very much in worrying about the prarabdha of others. Someone has more, someone has less, you know. Especially if someone else has more and they have less. That's a problem, you know. So that's there to test. Then you see, really, okay, you say you want Krishna. You go before the deity and say, Krishna, I'm yours, please, you know, like this. So then Krishna then tests that. Okay, someone else got the big position. You wanted to be temple president, someone else got it. And then, oh, yeah, great, fine, there, that. Or, how come he got it? You know, I'm the qualified one, or I'm the senior one, or I've done the most in this temple, or I'm the biggest collector, or I know the most, or I'm the best manager. Then we didn't mean what we said to Krishna. And Maya tricked us. So simply by someone else getting the position like that, then we drop from our standard of Krishna consciousness. Right? So it's like Krishna, these are the tests. So this is how Maya tests. We've been working since time immemorial for Dhanam Janam Sundarim Kavitam, like this. So now Krishna tests with that. So now you don't want these things, now use them in Krishna's service. See, it's very easy, it's just like this. Who is the most detached? It is, let us say, it is Ekadasi, right? And somebody decides, I'll do Nirjal today. It's not Nirjal Ekadasi, I'm doing Nirjal Ekadasi, right? Okay, so now the very common thing is the person who's doing, you know, fasting on Ekadasi, he doesn't go to prasad, right? He won't have anything to do with the prasad. He won't cook, he won't serve, he won't clean up, he doesn't want to do anything. I'm fasting, so I'll go chant, I'll go read, I'll this or that. So that some detachment is there, because instead of going and eating, they have not eaten. But the detachment is actually not that great, because the reason they won't go there at prasad is because if they're there, there's every chance that they're worried that they're going to eat. Now that person who is fasting on that day and who is actually detached, they can go and serve prasad to everybody else because they're not eating, so why someone who wants to eat has to serve prasad. You make the system much more efficient by everyone who's eating sits down, and the persons who aren't going to eat, then they serve prasad. You know? Like that. That person is the detached one. They are the ones that makes, and they are the happiest of everybody there. You know, because then it's just pure service.
Without sometimes service also thinking, oh, I wonder if there'll be something left for me.
Yeah, or they're making their own plate, you know, it's like they serve it out, or either what they like they put, or they see others really like that preparation, they start putting it aside, like that, you know. So, that sound familiar? So but that's the detached person. So this is what Krishna is looking for. Okay, you're detached. Okay, now do that service that we're detached from for Krishna. Right? Then it becomes, then that's when we make dynamic advancement. Then we make dynamic advancement. It's very important. See, thing is Manasamhita can only be understood if one understands the Bhagavad Gita, these aspects of the Gita. And Krishna in the Gita is saying, perform your prescribed duties. So where are those explained? Those explained in Manasamhita. So therefore, philosophy and religion go together. If you take the Gita and not the Dharma, then it's just speculation. And if you take the Dharma without Gita, it's just sentiment. So you have to have the two. The two have to go together. That's why it's very natural to get into these discussions when you're discussing this. Is that the two are inseparable. And fortunately for us, all this has been taken out and put in Prabhupada's books. So the exercise here going through is just to show that it's in Prabhupada's books. Because we see up to now, whatever's been described is already described there. In even more detail than is being given here. Bhagavatam explains much more of the creation than is going on here. But it doesn't have to. This is not a book of creation. That's done in the Puranas. This is a book of Dharma. So they just explain enough creation and everything to bring it down to the point where good and evil are created and the rules that govern both. Then this comes out. So now we see Bhrigu starts off explaining time. Right? Because time means activity. Time is where there's movement. So when you understand time, you understand movement. So once you understand movement, now he's going to give what are the rules for movement. Right? Like that. Otherwise someone will say, well, what's this got to do with this? And what has all the creation got to do with it? We want to get down to the rules. Where are the rules? No. Unless you understand how it connects to God, don't bother learning it. Otherwise, you'll just take this and go to hell. You know? And if you don't understand time and how it works, how do you understand movement? Because movement is time. You know? Like that. We see time is all described by movement. The blinking of an eye. That's movement. That's time. You know? How long it takes for the sun ray to cross over a molecule, an atom. It's time. So movement is time. So now we're going to learn that when you have karma is time and the three modes of nature. So when you combine those two, you get karma. So now I have time, there's going to be movement, but I don't act according to the modes of nature. I have desire for devotional service. Modes of nature will do it, but because I don't think I'm the doer and I am not the enjoyer, therefore there's no karma. That is called nishkam karma. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So without time is half the element. Now the rest of it is going to describe the three modes of nature. So when you put these two together, then if you've done it for the result, that's called karma. You're doing it not for the result, it's nishkam karma. In other words, devotional service. So it's very practical. You know, I mean it's methodical and logical Though unfortunately, that's not necessarily a well understood. There's a, what do you call it? Shaligram that Vyasadeva gave Madhvacharya. It's kept in a box. You know? And so he's named Nrisimhadeva, who's the Lord of the Box. Chapter. Lord of the Box. You know? Like that. So here also, Nrisimhadeva, Lord of the Box. Now the box is open. Okay. What time is it now?
9 o'clock.
Okay, so we'll just go through, we'll finish age, and then tomorrow he starts describing the modes. I mean, the varnas. Driven by the desire to create, mind and heart transforms creation. It means, in other words, it's from the mind, and the desires that one wants to fulfill, that creation happens. Right? Someone creates something to eat because of desire. Mm-hmm. You know, they create a house through the desire. They create, you know, so many things through the desire. The ether is produced from that. In other words, ether is produced from the desire of the mind. Mm. And sound is known as the quality of the ether. From the ether, as it transforms itself, becomes the unpolluted and powerful wind, the vehicle of all odors, which is regarded as having the quality of touch. From wind, it is also transforms itself, becomes light, shining and brilliant, dispels darkness, and is said to have the quality of form. And from light, as it transforms itself from the waters, which are traditionally known to have the quality of taste, from the waters comes earth, and with the quality of smell. This is the creation in the beginning. The age of the gods, which is mentioned before, lasts for 12,000 years. When it is multiplied by 71, it is called an epoch of a Manu, or the time of Manu. The epoches. The epoches of Manu are countless, and so are the emissions and reabsorptions of the universe, as if he were playing. The Supreme Lord does this again and again. It was, yeah, the Lord in his Leela, he manifests and brings them in and takes them out and brings them in. In the Satyayuga, religion is entire, standing on all four feet, and so is truth. And men do not acquire any gain through irreligion. But in the other ages, through such wrong gains, religion is brought down foot by foot. And because of theft, lying, and deceit, religion goes away foot by foot. In the Satyayuga, people are free from sickness, achieve all their goals, and have a lifespan of 400 years. That would be the demigods. Mm. And in the ages that begin with the Treta, their lifespan grows smaller foot by foot. The lifespan of mortals, which is mentioned in the Veda, the realized hopes of innate activities, and the special power of embodied beings bear fruit in the world according to the age. Religious duties of men are different in the Satyayuga and in the order of Treta Yuga, in the order of Dwapara. They are different for the Kali Yuga, the losing age, that's how they translated it, in proportion with the decrease of each age. Inner heat is said to be paramount in the Satyayuga, and knowledge in the Treta Yuga. They say the sacrifice in the Dwapara Yuga, and the one thing in the Kali Yuga is giving, or I guess charity. So therefore the audarya of giving, love of God, because that's the one thing that is powerful in this age, is charity. So the best of charity is Krishna consciousness.
Can you read that question?
Says, the inner heat is said to be paramount in the winning. In other words, meditation is the It says knowledge in the Treta Yuga, sacrifice in the Dwapara, and in the Kali Yuga is giving. Let's see here if it mentions, I think, 86, no.
It's also interesting that verse in the Gita, Yajnatapadhana.
Uh-huh.
You have Yajna from
the Treta.
Treta Yuga.
Hmm.
Tapa from Satya Yuga.
And these are always, they always must be done.
Mm.
It's interesting, giving. So it's very natural that in this age, then the Sankirtan movement, you know, the Avodari is the name.
One other thing I do. Dana for Dwapara Yuga, because you have the deities and you have to give everything.
Yes, yeah, sacrifice, also just giving.
Mm-hmm.
Also is here is that they generally the Dwapara is second,
mm-hmm.
and Treta is third,
mm-hmm.
but when Krishna comes it switches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. So that could also give this point of the thing of the knowledge and the sacrifice seemingly being switched between Treta and Dwapara. Because only once in a day of Brahma then it switches like that. When Krishna personally comes.
That sage's wife, Indra came in disguise as her husband.
Oh yeah, that was Gautama's wife.
So he just changed the yuga's around.
Mm-hmm.
He changed the yuga's around.
Oh, he did at that time. Is that what happened?
Gautama did.
Uh-huh.
He said, you should have known it wasn't Indra. You couldn't be you're a rascal, I curse you to become a stone. And she's begging, no, please be merciful. He said, I can't retract my curse. So he's better, no, you become a stone. How long? Please be merciful. Okay, you'll only be a stone, and you'll be delivered when Lord Ramachandra will come through this way to go for Sita Swayamvara or something, and he'll touch you with his foot and then you'll come back to your human form again. She said, that's so far away, that's in Treta Yuga, and now it's Satya Yuga. Please be merciful. So Gaudiya said, first you become a storm, and then I was merciful. I said, Ramachandra will free. Now I've been merciful, now I've given you this mercy. No, it's so far away. Please. I said, okay. I'll switch the yugas around. We'll have Treta Yuga come after Satya Yuga. And so, next yuga was Treta Yuga, Ramachandra came. Like when we were brilliant.
And so that's how it happened.
And he saved, and he delivered.
Sure.
It's in your mind. I can't remember what her name was.
Ahalya.
Ahalya, that's right. Does that pastime take place every time Krishna comes?
Maybe because then Swayam Ramachandra would come, Swayam Krishna would come, and then Swayam Chaitanya would come, like that.
And in other Kali Yugas?
Then the avatar will be golden, but it won't necessarily be the Lord Chaitanya himself, personally.
It'll be a Narayan expansion.
Yeah, that or Shaktivesh avatar.
And he'll teach Sankirtan. And he'll teach Sankirtan.
Yeah, and I think that one can go to Vaikuntha. One will be able to go to Vaikuntha.
Not tomorrow.
No. Goloka is only open once a day. When Swayam Lord Chaitanya and Swayam Krishna come. So those who follow the path of surrendering immediately, then they can go at that time to Krishna. And those who don't need to follow the process of sadhana bhakti or working for Krishna, then they come as a sankirtan. Mm.
That means there'll be a different maha mantra in the Abhayas?
Not necessarily. Maha mantras, even you see in Guru Vayur, then Shankaracharya established that they chant maha mantra at the elephant procession that they do every day. Yeah. Just they chant it backwards. Yeah, yeah. Chant, yeah. So I guess we'll end here. And tomorrow we'll continue. It starts with the varnas. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.